You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to a fresh episode of Locked On Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. Today's Locked On Rockets show is brought to you by SeatGeek. Download their mobile app for the easiest way to buy tickets, and the promo code LORockets, all one word, gets you a $20 rebate on your first purchase. Fair or unfair, the news of the day, and really maybe the week with the Rockets, is the official declaration of James Harden as the team's point guard. Now, it wasn't really that big of a deal to me because it was obvious from the moment that the Rockets said that James Harden and Pat Beverly would be their starting backcourt that, well, James Harden would be the primary facilitator and distributor because, well, that's the way it's been the last few years with Harden and Beverly. Pat Beverly is a point guard in name only. He is mainly a 3-and-D player, so when it comes to facilitating the offense distribution, Harden averaged almost double the amount of assists per game last year, and the ball is in his hands more. So whether he's listed as the point guard or not, he effectively serves that role in the offense. However, this is obviously not the view from the majority of NBA fans, as evidenced by the enormous traction that those stories got yesterday. Once D'Antoni made the official declaration, he announced it at Toyota Center after the team's morning practice on Monday, it spread like wildfire on social media. Predictably, a lot was negative of the reaction. A few people were just curious about it. And, you know, for a lot of reasons, I think there's a negative view of Harden. We'll get to that in just a moment, where people just look for reasons not to like him. There's also curiosity from, you know, a fantasy basketball standpoint. Is he really a point guard? People who don't really understand it. And there's just the sense that it's something new. Now, is it really that new? There are a few minor differences. We'll get to those later in the show. We've got a good interview coming on to discuss the X's and O's of how this might work. We did hear Mike D'Antoni mention that Harden's going to bring the ball up the court more often than he has in the past, and that will be a difference. But it's nothing huge. It is worth discussing, but I don't think it's worth leading off with. Really, the main change is that rather than downplaying it as they have in the past, now the Rockets are fully embracing the notion of Harden as their point guard and putting it out there. So why are they more likely to do that now than in the past? I see a couple of reasons. The main one is the presence of Mike D'Antoni. In the past, with Kevin McHale, J.B. Bickerstaff, there has not really been a true system for the Rockets on offense. It's been basically free flow. You look for your mismatches and you attack accordingly. Now, for the first time in several years, really going back to Rick Adelman, there is going to be a defined system. And with Mike D'Antoni's system in particular, it thrives with a quarterback, so to speak, with a point guard who can push the tempo and be that main playmaker, either for himself or for others, trying to make plays quickly in transition. We saw that 10 years ago with Steve Nash in Phoenix, and obviously D'Antoni's trying to replicate that in Houston with James Harden. So rather than it just being a mix-and-match system, a free flow where positions don't matter that much, now you're in a more structured system in some ways to where point guard is the leading identity. So I think that presence of D'Antoni has the Rockets more willing to make an official declaration. The other thing, quite frankly, it's just the way the roster is composed. Last year, at this time, the Rockets said a lot about playing Harden off the ball because Ty Lawson was in Houston at that time, and he was considered a big acquisition. However, where I think a lot of people got it wrong, I think a lot of people thought that the Rockets brought in Ty Lawson because they felt like they needed a true point guard alongside James Harden. And as I've said before on this show, I don't think that's what happened. My view of why the Rockets brought in Ty Lawson was, you know what, Daryl Morey always wants to bring in the most talent that he can. And in Ty Lawson in the 2015 offseason, he saw a guy who had been a really good NBA player, borderline all-star, who he could get on the cheap due to a confluence of factors, the two DWIs, the fact that Lawson so obviously wanted out of Denver, the fact that the point guard market was somewhat saturated. he saw Lawson as a player that, you know, regardless of whether he thought it was the best fit, he thought that he could get him for cheap, and obviously he could. The best player that went to Denver in the deal was Kostas Papanikolaou, and they ended up letting him go. It was a cheap package, and James Harden and Lawson were already friends, and I think it was basically a what the hell. Let's bring in this talented player. Let's try to make it work. And with regards to Lawson and Houston, the best way to give it a real shot was to let Lawson do his thing, which was to have the ball in his hands and be the point guard. And to do that, you had to obviously refer to James Harden as a willing off-the-ball player. So I think that's why last year you didn't see the Rockets embrace this role. They wanted to give the Ty Lawson experiment a chance. He was someone that, again, had been a borderline NBA All-Star who they got on the cheap. So they wanted to see if maybe they could make this situation work. And they gave it their best shot. It didn't work out. As I've said before, I don't think it was because Harden can't play with the point guard. I think it's because Ty Lawson, for a lot of reasons, including the DWIs, just was not a good basketball player last year. He was not ready to play. That was also proved in Indiana once he left Houston. And slowly over the course of the year, it transitioned back to, well, the same James Harden we'd seen the last few years, playing alongside Pat Beverly, in which he was the primary facilitator. But you just don't have many of these declarations during the year of, well, Harden's going to be our point guard. That's really a training camp thing. And last year in training camp, well, the emphasis was on trying to make Ty Lawson feel more comfortable. And then the other factor is that in Kevin McHale's system, also J.B. Bickerstaff, the role of a point guard really wasn't all that big of a deal. It's a little different here with Mike D'Antoni in place because, well, D'Antoni's system, it has that point guard as the primary quarterback, and there's no Ty Lawson or anyone else that wants to be that point guard in place. So I think they're in a position where they can embrace it more than in the past. I want to get to our interview in just a few minutes, but for now, I do want to throw a shout out to our friends at SeatGeek, who, of course, are sponsoring this show. Because it's always hard to find a good deal for the right game, including Rockets preseason games, which are coming up. I urge you guys, I think you can get tickets at a very good rate. You can learn a heck of a lot about the team. But for a lot of these older ticket sites, it's confusing to figure out, you know, what the best deal is. And they don't want to change that because the confusion works to their advantage. But SeatGeek is different. They've come along and created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. Really, everything about SeatGeek is designed to make life easier for you, the sports fan. They do all the price comparisons for you by searching multiple ticket sites to ensure that you get the best possible deal. They also want to help you get the most bang for your buck, and they do that by grading every ticket on the site from 1 to 100, with 100 being the best deal, so you can very easily find any underpriced seats and get the best deals for your budget. Now, to get your $20 rebate on tickets, here's what you do. Download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, and click add a promo code, and then enter the promo code LORockets. SeatGeek will then send you $20 in the mail after you've made your first ticket purchase. So remember, download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code LORockets today. Before we get to our interview, I want to add one big disclaimer. I really don't think this is that big of a story. As Mike D'Antoni joked himself yesterday to those of us in the media, he said, "We just renamed it so you guys would have something to write about." And then he jokingly called Harden a points guard because even though he's going to be the point guard in name, of course, he's still going to be a scorer. He was a second leading scorer in the NBA last year. So, again, it's not a huge transition. Why is it being spun as one? Well, I think we can all agree that it shouldn't be. And really, while there are some potential minor differences, we are going to get to those momentarily. The backstory, in my view, is this. Among casual sports fans that don't really watch the Rockets, there's a healthy dislike for James Harden. It's stupid and it shouldn't exist because James is a great guy and an amazing player, but we all know that it's out there. Why? Well, we could do an entire show on that, but for now, I think there are a few primary reasons. First, the Oklahoma City Thunder, they're generally a popular franchise and a very likable one, seeing as how they're a small market. And when Harden left them, largely due to financial reasons, it rubbed a lot of casual sports fans the wrong way. Now, people who follow the game and understand James's situation, I think they get what was going on. But there are a lot of people who just follow the headlines, and to them, they didn't like it. They saw it as a greedy move. Next up, less than a year later, Houston adds Dwight Howard as James's new co-star and basically brands it as a partnership. And you guys know that seemingly everyone in the world hates Dwight Howard except the fans of his own team. Fair or unfair, I think it's unfair because Dwight's a great guy. That's just the way it is. And last but not least, there's also the foul issue. It's so silly because, as Matt Moore told me on this very show last week, James Harden's ability to draw fouls, it's an amazing skill. He's so good at it, and it's not easy at all. He takes a freaking beating if you look at him after games. But again, for people who watch the game or the Rockets casually, whistles and free throws, they're not sexy, and that starts off people with a negative image in their mind of James Harden. So between the OKC factor, Dwight Howard, and fouls, that's three things right off the bat that have been going on several years that have casual sports fans basically looking for reasons not to like James Harden. The final tipping point in this equation, in my opinion, was the clips of his defense, which really started back during the 2013-2014 season. That was the first year with Dwight. Now look, I'm not going to give James a pass on this issue because he has had some bad mistakes. He's got to get better, and I think he's been the first one to admit it. However, today's world revolves around tweets of 140 characters or less, and vines of 6 seconds or less. We all know it. People's attention spans are shorter than ever. Again, not saying James should get a pass for his shortcomings. Not at all. What I'm saying is that these vines of his defense are an incredibly small sample and often get presented without any context whatsoever, and of course it's not a fair way to singularly judge a player. But for casual fans, they either don't care enough to learn more, or they've already preconditioned themselves to dislike Harden based on all those factors that we just got done talking about. Oklahoma City, Dwight, the free throws, etc. So anyway, the end result of all that, there's a huge segment of the sports reading population that thinks James Harden is a joke. Now, yes, I think that's incredibly dumb. Generally, I don't even like to address those people at all because it's a complete waste of time to debate with someone who isn't even really interested in learning about the subject in the first place. They're just incredibly simplistic and superficial. But the reason I'm saying all this now is that for these types of people, the world is often black and white. They see Harden as bad, so they try and make everything about him as bad. Even though he ranked 6th in the entire league in assists last year, and that came as a shooting guard, I've seen people calling Harden selfish because that's the easiest way to tie up everything under one little bow. They don't like Harden, they don't think he tries enough, so you know what? We're going to call him selfish too. Let's just make him the devil. And so when a major media site puts out a headline of Harden becoming a point guard, that's out there with people, and I'd say sometimes the media sites themselves, they know that point guard is a position that historically is a sexy one in the NBA. People associate the point guard position with leadership, with distribution, with selflessness. There's a positive word association with point guard and some of the traits that people tend to really like in sports. That selflessness factor, that leadership. And people try and think of, they prefer to think of James Harden not in those terms. So when those stories get out there, those sites know that a story like, well, Harden is a point guard, that's going to get them a ton of comments and shares from all the trolls who seemingly take it upon themselves to relentlessly criticize everyone and everything that they don't like. It's not that ESPN and anyone else putting out that headline is knowingly trying to troll James Harden. They just know it's good for their bottom line because James Harden stories, well, they get a lot of traction. And this is one that that people are passionate about. So they put it out there. Now, I do think there are some sites that do it better than the others. I think this story can be presented out of context. And while that's good for a short-term bump in clicks, long-term, I do think you lose reliability. Sites that consistently are able to contextualize well, I think there is a long game in journalism. You can win readers and more loyal readers that way. However, there are a lot of media sites, and I'm not talking just ESPN, a lot of them, I'm talking the aggregating sites that just want a cheap click. You know, they're not able to think long-term. They just want the most clicks they can get on a given day so they can hopefully close an advertising deal with their next client. And so to them, stories like this, it's a gold mine because Harden as a point guard, there are a lot of people that don't like him, so they're going to comment and share and they're going to engage with it because, well, they want to make fun of it, and that's what the internet is. And, you know, as Rockets fans, we all know it's silly, and generally I don't even like to address it because these people are so uninformed that, well, you know, you're not going to learn much about basketball or add in any kind of substantive discussion about that. But truth be told, that's why this story is out there. So before we talk too much about the story, I want to add in that disclaimer and explain that, well, that's why this story is out there and getting as much traction as it is. Anyway, with that disclaimer out, I want to spend the second half of our show on the actual interview. When I put together interviews for this show, I think in terms of generally three different demographics. The first are team personnel. That's players, coaches, GMs. Those can be the most insightful. I know people want to hear from them. However, I generally don't do too many shows on that because it's tough to get small group or exclusive comments all that often. Yes, we get comments from James Harden and Mike D'Antoni every day at training camp. However, by the time I can put this show together, you've probably already read it on Twitter, or in the case of this Harden at point guard stuff, you've seen it on SportsCenter, you've seen the stories on ESPN. So some of this, you know, basically it's old news. So yeah, I do want to get you info from the Rockets when I can. However, I prefer it to be when I can get, you know, something exclusive, or at least in a smaller group, so maybe you haven't heard it before. Because truth be told, if I'm just playing back audio from James Harden you've already heard, well, it's just a waste of everybody's time. No one's really learning anything. Second group of people I try and talk to are journalists who know a bit about basketball. I would put myself in that group. I would also put people like Calvin Watkins at ESPN, Dave Hardesty over at Clutch Fans. These are people that first and foremost are news gatherers. Their identity, and again, this is myself as well, is in their ability to contextualize, to sort through a story and tell you what the bullet points are, how this fits into the broader narrative of the Rockets season and their franchise. And these are where trained journalists are really, really useful. And so, yeah, I can do some of it myself, but the more input we have, the better. And it's not that we don't know basketball. Certainly, I've watched basketball my whole life. I've played the game. I understand the generics of X's and O's and sets, but I don't think of it from that prism. I look at it from a news value standpoint. And there's a lot of value in people like that because you can kind of tell, you can get to the bottom of, well, what did we really learn today? What's the most important? And so I get those sometimes. Last segment interviews are basketball people who know a bit about journalism. And this group is the most interesting. The difference between them and the journalists, yes, they know enough about journalism to communicate, especially in a, you know, radio podcast setting, but they might see the game in a way that I don't. They're able to recognize sets like horns, certain variations of the pick and roll, little things that I'm not going to pick up on because while I know basketball, I don't look at it from that standpoint. And where this group is really exciting is with the advent of Twitter and social media. Because in the past, it was really tough to find these people. You know, yes, you could find some people in the NBA front offices, the team front offices, that would tell you things. But obviously, they're going to be fairly guarded because, well, it's a secretive business. They don't want to go too much into the X's and O's of it and give away any secrets. And in terms of things away from the players, it was just the journalists. Because really, the journalist, newspaper, radio, TV, those were the only visible people. Well, now with the advent of social media, that wall is coming down. You can find smart people, even if they aren't, you know, a credentialed media member. They can be, you know, in an entirely different profession. But you know what? They understand the game in a way that I might not. So I'm always on the lookout for learning more. And if you're a Rockets fan on Twitter, one of those people that really fits in this last category is a guy named Rocket Intellect on Twitter. I know some of you might shudder at that. His real name is Paul, but everybody on Twitter knows him as Rocket Intellect. Initially, he was Harden's Intellect. But he's a college-age kid, very smart when it comes to the X's and O's of the game. I will freely admit, he's taught me a lot about that. So when I thought about putting together this podcast and talking about the actual X's and O's impact, which is fairly small, but there are going to be some differences, he was a natural fit to me. We haven't had him on the show yet, but he understands the game, especially the X's and O's side of it, better than most others, including myself. Haven't had him before. He's a great addition to Rockets Twitter, and I think he's going to be a great addition to this show as well. So if you will stand by for just one moment, I'm going to get Paul, a.k.a. Rocket Intellect, on the show right now. All right, now we have got Paul, a.k.a. Rocket Intellect, the man himself, on the show for the first time. Paul, welcome to Locked on Rockets.
Hey, Ben. Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Sure thing. I just got in giving you some praise because I do think you're a really sharp X's and O's guy, one of the better ones in Rockets Twitter. And, of course, the Harden to point guard story, yes, it's a little overblown because, well, he may as well have been the point guard for however many years that he's played alongside Pat Beverly. But when D'Antoni, when he stated the news yesterday, he did reference some distinct differences. The first and foremost that stood out was Harden bringing the ball up the floor, which is something he has not done in the past all that often. So I know that's something you were very excited about on Twitter, But for people who may not quite understand it, tell people why you're optimistic about Harden bringing the ball up more often.
Well, the big thing that excites me is, something to think about here is, while the amount of time that Harden spends with the ball, because he was already the primary playmaker, might not change, what will change is where and when he has the ball. Throughout his time here under the McHale regime, especially last year, Harden did not always bring up the ball, and when he didn't bring up the ball, especially in late-game situations, because everybody and their mom knew who the Rockets wanted to get the ball to, the opposition would really just work their butts off trying to prevent the Rockets from finding Harden. And from the Rockets' perspective, there was a lot of time and energy wasted doing this every play over and over again, just trying to find Harden and combat these ball denials. But even when he got the ball, it wasn't necessarily in the ideal spot. Because Harden was being denied, he struggled to get the ball. He might have been running a pick and roll from 35 feet out with 10 seconds left on the shot clock as opposed to 25 feet out with 16 seconds left on the shot clock. And that's a big deal. That changes the way a defense is going to treat a pick and roll, and it limits your options as an offense. And it just limits how much time you have to get a good shot, obviously. Now Harden can just get it in the backcourt where teams can't effectively deny the ball.
Yeah.
He can just start the action whenever he wants, whether it be a pick and roll or a floppy set. And in his case, because he's so gifted with the ball in his hands, wherever he wants. And something to keep in mind here, which is probably the main reason I'm excited, is for years this has been an issue, as I've said, under McHale and JBB, that has gone unaddressed. But as soon as NBA walks into the building on the first day of training camp, he fixes one of the biggest fundamental flaws of the offense. And that that's a stark statement for me. And that really matters. If this was to be the only offensive adjustment that MDA made, it obviously won't be.
Yeah.
But if it were to be, the offense would be improved. And he just, what makes this really exciting is D'Antoni seeing an offensive inefficiency, seeing a quirk, and just nipping it in the bud right away. And that speaks to the respect that Harden has for him, and that speaks to D'Antoni's keen eye. And that's an exciting thing, and really a genuine reason for optimism, I think.
Yeah. Another angle of it that I thought was interesting, there's a line in Jonathan Fagan's story about it in the Chronicle that mentions as much as Harden handled the ball last season, he ranked just 98th in the NBA in percentage of possessions spent as the ball handler in the pick and roll. And so I'm wondering, is it fair to say that with Dwight out, again, I'm not going to blame Dwight for everything under the sun, but he obviously was not that willing of a pick and roll participant, and you've replaced him with bigs like Clint Capella, like Nene, big, so they're going to be more willing to play more possessions in the pick and roll. Does that play even more into the idea of Harden bringing the ball up the court and getting into pick and roll situations all the quicker?
Yeah, absolutely. And I would see there were a lot of times, especially last year, where you would see James Harden, if he were to bring up the ball, he would just be at the three-point line waiting for a screen when Dwight was in. But when Clint Capella was in and Dwight was out, you would see Clint Capella running or sprinting to set a screen for Harden before he even gets to the three-point line. And that is a big difference in timing, and that makes the defense have to react, as you said, all the quicker, and that makes and that's going to force mistakes. If you make the quicker you make the defense think, the more mistakes that they're going to make.
Yeah. You already touched on another angle earlier, which is the usage and fatigue. And I really think this is getting overblown a lot. Yes, Harden's going to technically expend a little more energy bringing the ball up the floor, but I think people, and James said this himself in his interview yesterday, are really underselling just how much energy he had to expend, you know, wrestling with people away from the ball to get up. I mean, we saw that all the time when, especially late in games, you know, people like Tony Allen would just hold the guy and he would have to expend all the energy in the world just to, you know, get out to Pat Beverly for a handoff, you know? So to me, any additional energy he spends bringing the ball up the floor, it's easily offset by reduced wrestling. That's what I'm going to call it, away from the ball. Is that fair?
Yeah, and that was the word that Harden used, wrestling. And I think that you are just absolutely right in the fact that, if anything, it's going to save energy for Harden. You know, running without having, like, a, say, 210-pounder on your body is a lot different than, like, trying to hold your ground with a 210-pounder leaning on you.
Yeah.
That makes, the difference is huge. You know, they can, Harden can, any of us can, like, train to do sprints or jogs from, like, one baseline to another, but what we cannot emulate is a 210-pounder leaning against us, denying the ball, holding us, and grabbing us and fouling us.
Yeah. Another angle that I don't think, I'm surprised that people, even Rockets fans, don't seem to get, is that the change to point guard is in name only, or in offense only, I should say, because if, as long as you're going to start Pat Beverly with him, and the Rockets confirmed that today, why in the world would James guard other point guards? It's so silly to me. There's a segment of even Clutch fans saying, well, you know, now Harden's going to get torched by Russell Westbrook or Stephen Curry on defense. I mean, to me, it just seems completely laughable, the idea that, well, because Harden's the point guard on offense, that means he's inherently going to guard point guards on the other end. Obviously, you can mix and match however you see fit, and Pat Beverly, with smaller size, more quickness, is going to be your primary defender for the likes of Russell Westbrook on the other end. I don't see that changing at all. Do you?
Yeah, I don't see that changing at all either. The only difference that this is going to be is Harden running the show on offense. There aren't going to be any defensive changes.
Yeah.
I don't really see why anyone is trying to say that, oh, this means that Harden is going to have to guard point guards. You would see James Harden, for instance, you would see James Harden, like, guarding power forwards.
Yeah.
Once in a while last year, does that mean that he's a power forward? I don't think so. So why exactly are we, like, pegging a point guard to guard other point guards? A lot of the time you don't even see Stephen Curry or Russell Westbrook guard the actual point guard that they are playing. So that doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
No, it didn't to me either. Like I said, to me, a lot of this is a straw man argument for people who, you know, are either down on James or the Rockets and basically want something to complain about. So, you know, if you want something to complain about and you look hard enough, you're going to find one. In reality, no, you can guard. And yeah, you're pointing out that Harden even guarded power forwards, which he did. I mean, it's not going to change that at all. Defensive responsibilities will be what they always have been. And really, in D'Antoni's system, D'Antoni's a big believer in positionless basketball. The one difference is point guard on offense, because, of course, D'Antoni's system does have that quarterback, that Steve Nash, whatever you want to call it, to kind of run the show and orchestrate, and that's what James Harden is hopefully going to be able to do here. Otherwise, on offense, the other angle I wanted to explore was what this means for Pat Beverly, because now that Pat's not going to be bringing up the floor, and of course, sometimes he will. There are going to be sometimes, I'm sure, when Pat brings it up and James trails him, which happened to a small extent last year. But when, let's pretend in most circumstances, you know, James walks the ball up the court himself. what does this mean for Pat Beverly? Does it mean he's going to be going around screens more often? Is he going to be exclusively a floor spacer? What changes do you see this making for Pat on offense?
Well, at least last year, it probably would have meant that Pat Beverly is going to play in the corner. But in speaking in terms of this year with Mike D'Antoni and the offensive system changing, I think you're just going to see Pat Beverly play with the ball, play off the ball more, obviously, and maybe play in the area of what is called the slot,
yeah,
where you see, and it's kind of, it's basically above the break. It is on the three-point elbow, so there are two slots, and I'm sorry, I didn't explain that well. So there are two slots. The slot is opposite of the ball, is on the opposite ball of the,
yep,
the hand. The slot is on the opposite side of the ball handler, and the slot is basically at the elbow.
Yep.
That's where I think he'll be spotting up, and you might see him running off of screens occasionally. I don't really picture Pat Bev as someone that is going to shoot coming off of screens, because I've never really seen
right.
him do that.
Yeah, me neither.
But
that's
you
why
might
I was curious.
Him
yeah.
set a lot of screens too,
yeah.
because he's a tough player, and that's the type of thing that I could see him doing.
Yeah. No, the flip side, when Eric Gordon's in, which, of course, Beverly and Gordon are largely going to split time, when Gordon's in with Harden, I would imagine that Gordon's someone who would shoot a lot coming around screens.
Yeah, absolutely. And he shot very well on pull-ups, which is not the same thing as shooting coming off of screens,
yep.
but it does show an ability to shoot on the move, which is a quality that not a lot of players have. And you're going to see a lot of shots for Ryan Anderson coming
yeah.
off of screens as well. Those would be the two guys other than Harden that I would anticipate a lot of plays run for to
yep.
get threes on the move.
Yep. Okay, final question, and this is completely a different issue than Harden and the official point guard title. The other big theme out of Toyota Center this week, there's definitely been a clear refusal to commit to Clint Capella as a starter at center. And I think of you when I hear about that, because, of course, you've been a huge proponent of Clint Capella's ability this entire offseason. And while, you know, my bet is that he still ends up earning the spot, clearly Nene has been playing with the first team to open camp, and they're at least stating an open willingness to for Nene to win that job. So, A, are you surprised? And B, are you at all concerned by that?
I'm definitely surprised. I was fairly sure that Capella would be the starter on opening day, and we'll see if that happens or not. But the apprehension to make a commitment is somewhat concerning for me, because in reality, Nene is a very good player, but there's a certain amount of minutes that you have
yeah.
to commit to a starting five. And Nene can't stay healthy enough for you to commit those minutes to him. Capella at least has one season of sample size where you can say, okay, he stayed reasonably healthy and under a certain amount of minutes. Let's see if he can play, 30 minutes a game, and have Nene play 18 minutes a game. And I think that that would be absolutely the way to go, but I have heard MDA allude to the fact that the name might start, but
yeah, been playing with him, actually referred to him as potentially a top five center, which I kind of laughed at.
Yeah, that was weird to me.
Yeah, but as I've said before on this show, I think a little bit of it, there's a tiny bit of lip service being paid, because certainly Nene gave the Rockets a sweetheart deal because he wanted to be here. He thinks this system is good for him. But, and they want to make clear that both to Nene as well as everybody else that, yes, jobs can be won. But, again, I'd be surprised if Nene actually starts on opening night. I think a lot of this is just making Capella earn it. And based on everything we've seen, I think that he's fully capable of doing that. Anyway, Paul, thank you so much for joining us. Toss out your Twitter handle and, well, tell everybody a little bit about you if they if they're not already following you.
Right. So I'm at Rocket Intellect, just Rocket and then Intellect spelled out, and I am a writer for RedNationHoops.com. I cover the Rocket specifically for RedNationHoops.com, and for the rest of the league, I guess I'm sort of a macro blogger.
Yes.
In the sense that I tweet about a lot of other basketball yep. games and watch a lot of other basketball games. But I'm going to do a weekly column this season about the Rockets and just basically going over what happened the previous week and breakdown film each week. So that should be a pretty good read, in my opinion.
Definitely. I think so, too. Paul, thanks so much for the time. Appreciate you joining the show for the first time and look forward to having you on again in the future, okay?
Okay.
Thank you. Good stuff. That was Paul, a.k.a. the Rocket Intellect himself. Appreciate his insight. Thought he hit the nail on the head with regards to what it means for James Harden and Pat Beverly, as well as Eric Gordon. And really, I thought the essence was his comments on defense. This does not need to change that side of the ball at all. I didn't go into that earlier. But yes, when Mike D'Antoni is talking about a point guard, he is talking exclusively about his system, who's going to run it. That's all that is. Because a point guard, it is increasingly becoming a positionless league, especially in Mike D'Antoni's system. But point guard is one of those things. Yes, it is your organizer. It is your orchestrator. So yes, it's important to be clear with that label, who's doing it. But on the defensive end of the floor, it changes nothing. The Rockets are going to match up with whoever the best player is to guard that opponent. And usually, if it's a very quick point guard like Russell Westbrook or Stephen Curry, that's going to be Pat Beverly, just as it was last year when Pat Beverly was arguably a top five defensive point guard. So nothing's going to change in that end. It's just making roles clear on offense. That's something Mike D'Antoni and the team has said repeatedly, that they want roles to be clear, players to accept those roles. So that's what you're seeing more of in these first few days of training camp. So with that said, I'm going to wrap up today's show. Again, you can follow Paul on Twitter at Rocket Intellect. You can follow me on Twitter at Ben Dubose. You can follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Rockets. And you can email the show at LockedOnRockets@gmail.com if you have any questions or if you would like to become a sponsor for this show in the future, just like SeatGeek is today. Again, today's show is brought to you by my fine friends at SeatGeek, where you can download their mobile app for the easiest way to buy tickets, and that promo code LORockets gets you a $20 rebate off of your first purchase. So again, that's the latest from Toyota Center on this Tuesday, September 27th. I thank all of you guys for listening, and I'll be back with you again later this week.